You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
All right, let's go. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports app. Good morning. We'll address the Mariners in a moment. I promise. They will be addressed. Things will be said.
Ugh.
I know.
Just got some housekeeping.
We have some housekeeping to do first. Yeah, no, I wanted to tell you guys about what happened yesterday. We'll lead it off quickly because I thought Maura was nice enough to text and ask and kind of wonder how my weigh-in went at the doctor's yesterday. I went to the doctor's office and I refused to be weighed in. I'm going to do it. I know that I've gained a little bit of weight. I know that I need to lose it. I know roughly how much, but I don't need to see the exact number. Certainly not with clothes on and everything. Like I don't shoes. I don't need to see a number that is going to just sort of make it even like, you know, throw my hands up in despair. Like, oh, I'll never lose that.
Going into a weekend.
Yeah. So I don't need that kind of, you know, in my life, whatever it is. So, I refused. So here's how it went. I kind of walked into the doctor's office and they take, you know, we'll get to the forms that I had to fill out in a moment. And they kind of take me back and they're like, okay, this is so-and-so. She's training today. Don't worry, I'll be with you the whole time. And she's like, very nice. Like, hi, I'm the medical assistant. It's like my second day here. I'm like, okay, that's great. She's like, yeah, I just need you to take off your shoes and, you know, get your height and weight. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm not going to do that. And she's like, oh, okay. And she kind of looks at the guy with confusion, right? Because, of course.
She's being tested.
Right. This is like.
You sent a plant in to see what I do
exactly.
Now.
Exactly. And he's like, oh, yeah, no, it's fine. You just write down refused. And I was like, well, you could write refused politely.
You're like, well, it's one of my favorite bands. Refused is a great band.
Right. Like, I'm not being a jerk about it. I'm not like, you know, I'm not like one of the people who's, you know, picketing the mask mandate or something. Like, I'm just saying I don't want to do that. And they're like, okay, it's fine. She's like, but can you still take off your shoes because we want to just make, you know, check your height. And I'm like, okay, my height's been the same forever, but like, all right, yeah, like I'm 5'10". I'm always been within a quarter inch of 5'10", whether it's 5'10 exactly or 5'9¾". Like, uh-huh. Yeah, okay. Well, so why don't you do that? I'm like, okay, so do that. She's like, yeah, 5'9¼".
You're like, nope.
And I'm like, all right, well, now I'm going to start refusing heights.
We do shrink as we get older.
All right, but I'm not supposed to be that old yet. I'm only 44. I'm already shrinking. This is like Brock's fantasy come true. For years, he's tried to tell me I'm not 5'10", and we measured. I was 5'10". I've done it any number of times at the doctor's office, and now they're saying 5'9¼", like a full 3/4 of an inch. That's a lot.
Where did you get the idea? Like, who planted the idea for you that you didn't have to get on the scale?
My wife and my mom.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Both told me, like, yeah, you don't have to get on the scale.
I've never heard. I just assumed anytime I went to the doctor, I had to do exactly what was told.
Well, of course. That's exactly what I assume. But I just, like, yeah, Heather has told me that, like, she just, you could tell people, yeah, don't do it. And my mom was like, yeah, I haven't weighed on a scale in 30 years. Like, oh, okay.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So just,
I mean, I've heard the movement where you'll get on the scale or you'll get measured or whatever.
Yeah.
And just ask them not to read it back to you.
Oh,
I guess I've heard of that.
I could have done that, but I don't want the doctor coming in and then giving me grief about it. And like, he doesn't, you know, he's not the one doing the weighing. So he comes in as like, oh, 230 or something, whatever.
You're like, I'm a Pop-Tart influencer. Don't worry about it. I got business going on.
Thank you. I was just going to say, what if he pulled up the podcast and was like, I'm going to count how many times you've mentioned Pop-Tarts at 5:30 in the morning.
So I want to hear a little bit more about how you had a cupcake before 6 a.m. last week. So yeah, no, I mean, obviously, you know, that went okay, but they're not going to check my height ever again. I'm 5'10". And if they think they're going to check my height, they're absolutely crazy. The other thing that kind of happened to me, and I don't know if this has happened to people, but what I'm noticing about the world is that we are making really, really great strides in making things easier, more seamless, more digital, etc. But they don't work if you then ask people to do the same thing again. So, like, we've done a great job with, like, you get to the airport and you don't know, you have everything checked in on your phone, right? You don't need to go get a paper ticket. I know, Maury, you were saying your dad wants to still have a paper ticket for safety's sake.
We have a trip coming up end of next month and he's very concerned about whether he can have a paper ticket or not.
But for most of us, you don't need to do that, right? But imagine if every time you spent all the time checking in online, you then got to the airport and are like, well, better go get a paper ticket, and, like, went through the whole process. So before my doctor's appointment, they sent me 15 minutes worth of forms, which I filled out, right? When was the last, how many drinks per week do you have? When was the last time you smoked? What's the this? What's the that? What's your family history?
Sure.
Who was your grandfather? What was, and I spent all this time filling out the thing online. They're like, great, you're done. I uploaded my insurance. I did it all. I get there. I check in. The woman's like, great. Here's a clipboard with like five forms. I look at them. I'm like, these are the same damn forms I filled in last week. And she's like, oh, well, you can just tell them you already filled them out. Okay.
It's another test.
So I do that. Like, I walk up and they're like, oh, can I have your forms? Like, I already filled them out, but here you go. They're online. Like, okay. So we go through the fake weigh-in process and all that. And I sit down with the medical assistant. She's like, oh, we just need to ask you some questions. She sits down on the computer. She proceeds to ask me all of the same questions that are on the form.
For the third time.
Third time!
The answers are the same.
And I'm finally, like, halfway through, I'm like, look, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude about this. Do you have access to all of the answers I gave online about this? And she's like, oh, no, I don't see any of that. I'm just like,
who's reading that stuff then?
Wait, yeah, exactly, where did that go? And why aren't these two systems synced? Why am I literally answering the same questions a third time? It's baffling to me.
As you're eating a Pop-Tart?
I was not eating a Pop-Tart in the doctor's office. Obviously, I was having a drink and smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, so. Cigarette.
I love that the 425's like, tune in to listen to the Ems hearing about Salk's trip to the doctor. Do you really want to talk about the Ems right now?
Yeah, all right.
We're putting
we can
it off.
Do that. You want me to rant about how the Mariners have scored more than three runs twice in their last eight games?
Oh.
I mean, it's been awful. Nine games, excuse me. They've lost eight of nine. They're not hitting. Robbie Ray, I mean, I'll talk about him for a little while. I'm disappointed, and I know he kind of gutted and gritted through it again. And, like, other than these, like, single innings where it's gotten away from him, he's been fine. But, like, I want a Cy Young Award winner. That was that was the idea when you went out and got Robbie Ray. You know what the Cy Young Award winner doesn't do? Give up a four spot in the fourth inning, including a Mike Zunino home run. So I'm not going to sit here and rail against Robbie Ray. It's not like he's not working hard. And, I mean, look at his face. He's clearly sort of bothered by what's going on. And he kind of labored through it all, I thought. But, like, I don't know. I'm watching this and, like, That's not Cy Young Award winning
right.
stuff.
It's not $23
right?
million dollars a year.
So. No, that's like, okay, you've got a good innings eater who gets you through the game and gives you a quality start and a chance to win. But when you are scuffling the way the Mariners are, I want my Cy Young Award winner to come out and shove. I want him to come out and make it impossible for you to lose that day. I want him to take a Rays lineup that is very good. It's no shot at the Rays. And shut it down for the night and maybe give up a run and give your team the opportunity to really win the game. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. So I don't know. Last night kind of got me a little bit. I still do believe they'll be okay. I know they're, a couple of games below 500 now. I don't have any fear yet that this Mariners season is going to get away from them. There's a tough part of the schedule. They're obviously not fully healthy. They're not hitting, which is, to me, a temporary state, not a permanent one.
Mm-hmm.
But you let it get too far away from you, and everything kind of crashes and burns. And so, no, I'm not panicked. I'm still not even quite worried. But I'm really getting closer because it's frustrating to watch, and I'm sure they're just as frustrated watching the team not score runs. And now you're starting to make some moves. There's probably going to be some more roster moves coming. We'll wait and see what happens in the off day on Thursday. That'll be like the day circled on my calendar. It's kind of a D-day of like, all right, what are we doing here, boys? What kind of changes are going to need to be made? Because they've declared this season to be win now, and then yesterday they went all in on win now in a way that I'm not sure I like. So I'll talk about that and everything you need to know next. It is the Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, that home cooking didn't help, at least the way it was supposed to. Mariners fall behind early, unable to bounce back late. Robbie Ray was mostly good, but fell apart in the fourth inning, gave up four, including this Mike Zunino blast.
The 3-1 swung on, belted deep to left field. Winker going back to the warning track, looking up, and goodbye baseball. Into the Rays bullpen, Mike Zunino with a 3-run home run here in the top of the fourth inning, and the Rays now lead 4-0 for Zunino, his third home run of the season.
There's nothing worse than a player who once played for your team and was disappointing in some ways, coming back and doing that to you. It's just, it is beyond frustrating. It gets me every time. M scratched and clawed their way back in. Wasn't enough. 4-3 the final. They now have lost 8 of 9. They've fallen to 12-14 on the year. Scott Servais did switch up the lineup a little bit before the game. Moved Abraham Toro up to the leadoff spot, dropped Jesse Winker and Adam Frazier, and actually they both responded with home runs, but they do continue to struggle. Just stringing together hits in the losing stretch, they've only scored more than 3 runs twice. Not great. And while Ray, again, looked mostly good last night, continues to pitch his way deep into games, which is good, just hasn't shown that Cy Young stuff that brought him here. So I don't want to bring up the contract and say, oh, they paid him this amount of money, you expect this kind of results. But they did bring in, this was their big move, and he was the reigning Cy Young Award winner. He hasn't been bad. He hasn't looked like he did last year. The strikeout numbers aren't the same. It was good to see the velocity back. But there are these moments where you need somebody to step up, and, you know, you sure would like it to be him based on the situation that he's been put in.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
It was a busy day of roster moves, as promised by Jerry DePoto on this show yesterday, but they all involved pitchers. The biggest news, of course, Matt Brash sent to Tacoma, where now he will work as a reliever, Scott Servais explains.
You know, we were to probably introduce the bullpen to him, you know, so he'll probably come out of the bullpen down there. I think he can come back maybe and impact our club sooner if he can get a feel for coming out of the bullpen. And that would be like maybe in some longer stints where he comes in for 2 or 3 innings at a time, or he can use him in a short stint as well. But give him some experience doing that. Do not want to make that conversion first time coming out of the bullpen in the big leagues. That's not fair to him.
You know, what's funny, too, is they almost did it last year with everything on the line trying to make the playoffs. They were going to have him come out and make his major league debut, potentially out of the pen. But anyway, look, there's some risk here as it changes his development pattern, potentially limits his long-term value. But I can tell you this, and I know this, this was not decided overnight. It wasn't just based on his first 5 starts. This was talked about as an option dating all the way back to the offseason and maybe even through spring training. They believe they can help, that he can help by essentially taking those multiple innings at a time, and that this is the best way to help the team right now. We'll talk more about it here at 7 o'clock. I'm not sure I fully agree with them, but I at least understand the decision, and I'm glad to know that it wasn't made like spur of the moment here in the last couple of days. Other moves, Matt Festa goes to the IL. Nick Margavichus was DFA'd, and they bring up relievers Riley O'Brien and Danny Young. So meanwhile, who's going to start in Brash's spot? No word yet, although I'm pretty sure they know. You would think it would either be George Kirby or Levi Stout. Kirby has been really good, pitched 24 innings for Arkansas this year, given up a total of 5 earned runs, 5 walks, and 32 strikeouts, an ERA of 1.82. And then one other Mariner note, Tom Murphy scratched with neck spasms last night. They hope that that will only be a couple of days.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, as the Seahawks start rookie mini camp today, we'll get our first look at some of those new additions. And obviously that starts with Charles Cross. Excited to see the athleticism and kind of what he looks like on the move, operating in space. That's where he should really shine, especially should work well in this Shane Waldron offense. Sure seems like everyone's busy taking shots right now at the Seahawks quarterback situation. Mike Florio writing yesterday, quote, now every team other than the Seahawks appears to have a solid plan at the position. Really? You think every team except the Seahawks has a solid plan? I could go through any number of quarterbacks that are being given I mean, you think the Vikings have a solid plan with Kirk Cousins as their starter? No, they don't. It's been however long and it hasn't worked out for them, but they keep rolling out the same thing year after year. That's not a solid plan. It's just a familiar name, and that is not necessarily the same thing. Meanwhile, other national media folks getting involved. Here's RG3.
The Seattle Seahawks will never admit, but they are playing for next year. And the only way that they win games this year is if Geno Smith or Drew Lock become something that they have never been, and that's great quarterbacks.
Yeah, and he's not wrong about that. They've never been that. I've said much of the same thing. But I will admit something, and I know this is just part of my personality. The more these guys nationally have like come to a consensus that the Seahawks have screwed up, the more okay I am with it. I don't like when everybody's consensus.
You don't have a history of that.
Hey, Maura, I'm 5'9 and a quarter now.
Things have changed.
I can't handle this kind of criticism this early in the morning. Yes, I can be a bit of a contrarian. I understand that. But there is something to the fact that, like, when the entire national media agrees on something, you have to, like, give it a side eye and be like, I wonder if this is real. And look, I don't believe that they're a good long-term solution with either of those guys. But clearly they want to limit the importance of the quarterback. They want to run, make safe throws, occasional deep shot kind of thrown in. And I'd rather have them commit to the quarterback they want when they're good and ready rather than making a mistake and committing to somebody that they just don't believe in. So that's where they're at. Sounds like KJ Wright would like to return to Seattle.
I want to go back home. I think it's that simple. Seattle know that I want to come back. They know that how much they mean to me. Last year, I left, went to Vegas by myself. My family didn't come with me. Not doing that again. I don't think I'm going to move my family anywhere else across the country. And so, if it's not Seattle, then you know I'll be happy. I'll be content.
Yeah, that's KJ Wright talking to Trey Wingo on his podcast there, and a couple of things. One. KJ's always done a really good job of walking the line between football player and person. Do you know what I mean? Like, you kind of get to know who he is and what he's about all the while watching him out on the field. I don't know whether there's a fit there for him to come in the new 3-4 system. And, you know, they've drafted some guys. They've got a lot of dudes who play outside linebacker right now. I don't know whether they would need or want KJ to return. But, you know, who doesn't like KJ Wright? And beyond any of that, it just speaks to some of the community that was built here during that time, that KJ wants to come back, wants to have his family here, wants to continue to live here. I think Bobby's the same way. I know he's in LA now, but my understanding is he'll probably return and live the rest of his life here as well. So, yeah, I don't know. There was a special community that was built here with the Seahawks of that era. That's why Doug Baldwin still lives here. Sherman still has a house here. I don't think that stuff is an accident that they were that connected to this community. That's everything you need to know, and we do that quarter past every hour.
Yeah, KJ Wright was with Big Walt when they welcomed Charles Cross into the city, too.
Really?
Yeah, like they were together. I've never seen Big Walt and KJ shaking hands with Charles Cross.
Just a free agent, right? Yeah, and it does also tell you, and I know KJ never wanted to leave necessarily to begin with. It kind of worked out that way. But how many of the guys who leave here after a couple of years, or a year in his case, are like, I kind of want to go back. Yeah, that's pretty good. I kind of like the situation that I had going on there in Seattle. I like the vibe. I like the people. I like the building. I just kind of like the way things worked.
And maybe a year or two removed from being away from the team, the dust settles a bit. Say bitterness or anger goes away. Maybe those aren't the feelings they had, but you start to look back on it with a little bit of a different shine.
Yeah, a little perspective, right? Yeah. Of, okay, this is what it was like in Seattle, and maybe I was frustrated by things at the time. Oh, I went somewhere. Oh, this is not as good. I don't like this. This isn't professional. Isn't great.
Listening to him on that Bussin' with the Boys podcast earlier this offseason, I don't even think there was any of that then.
No,
he just
I don't
said
think so.
That they, like, no, not like, just, they just not didn't, KJ. They just didn't call. Right, like, yeah. He was like, I wanted to be there.
Not in his case. I don't know, but I think that in other cases we've seen that.
Earl
and later,
or
like, geez, I was pretty good back there. Kind of wouldn't mind returning. I think KJ knew that all the way along. And, you know, unfortunately, he just may not fit into their plans anymore. And it's tough when that happens with a beloved player who likes it here and you like him. But at some point, you've got to move on. And they are, whether they say so or not, kind of building something towards the future rather than kind of looking towards the past. So we'll see. Maybe they want the veteran leadership. And maybe, you know, KJ, the person, is so valuable to have in that outside linebacker room, working with Aboye Mafe, working with some of the young players, that they think it's worth it. And that would be great. I certainly would welcome KJ back, as I'm sure would every Seahawks fan. All right. With the Mariners' bats scuffling, how far away is their 2020 Rookie of the Year? Jerry DePoto gave us that answer and a whole lot more. That's next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710.
Jerry DePoto Show, presented by Seattle Pump and Equipment on Seattle Sports Station.
Hi, Jerry. Good morning.
Morning, Mike.
Let's see. You guys happy to be coming home, huh?
I'm not sure that the road trip could have gone a whole lot worse for us, but, you know, glad to get home and see if we can get the bats going against more good pitching.
Yeah, the pitching sure seems to, I mean, you know, and it's not a shot at the teams you started off the year or faced at home, but the pitching you guys saw on the road between Tampa and Miami and obviously in Houston was really impressive.
You know, it's really been like that across the board this year, league-wide. It's been a very fast start for pitching staffs around baseball and, you know, really including our own. You know, we've had our fair bit of success ourselves, but, you know, we had a great week, or I guess 9 days when we were at home last, and we had a really rough road trip, and somewhere in between that great and really rough is probably where we reside, and now we have to figure out, you know, over this next month who we are.
I enjoy talking to Manny Acta. He's one of my favorite people around the team in general. He was on with me yesterday, and he was talking a lot about, you know, paying attention to process rather than just results. Can you help explain what that is and how you guys use process to determine how successful you are?
You know, it's all about what you do rather than the results. And oftentimes the results tend to take care of themselves if you focus on smaller process. And when Manny says that, he's talking about dominating the strike zone. And, you know, it's a first and foremost, it's the pitches you swing at. It's the strikes that you throw. And, you know, we have done a generally good job, especially in the batter's box, of dominating the strike zone. You know, we lead the league in walks. We have made swing decisions that are on par with championship teams. And unfortunately, we just haven't done much with the opportunities. You know, we've had some poor batted ball luck, and that's just part of the game that comes and goes, especially when you're facing good pitching. But we're swinging at the right pitches. We're putting them in play. We're not striking out. We're taking our walks. Our exit velocities are perfectly fine. The process suggests that our offense should be better than it has been. And really, until this last week, it was very good. Mm-hmm. So we feel like we're going to get back to that. And from the pitching side, we had done all those things. And, you know, a couple of sloppy starts in there with where walks got away from us. But generally, we have been doing the same things. And as a result, you know, one of the four or five best teams in the league in terms of run suppression. So hopefully, again, we can get back to allowing that process to carry us to better results. But that's the part that we're just going to have to rely on. We can only focus on what we can control.
You mentioned being on par with championship teams. Is there a relationship there between teams that win championships and teams that are able to determine which pitches to swing at?
Yeah, I think that generally speaking, if you go and look at walk strikeout ratios on either side of the ball, mm-hmm. and you just sort, you know, if you go to FanGraphs, you go to Baseball Reference and you sort by the strikeout walk ratios. And again, prior to this last bit of sloppy pitching, we had been right at the top of the league in strikeout walk, and we still reside at the top of the league in walk strikeout. So, and that is the, you know, and when Scott has referenced in the past baseball's line of scrimmage, that's where it is. It's the team that manages the it's almost like turnovers in football. You know, it's the giveaways and the takeaways. And you know, you have to take away more than you give. And we have done a very good job of that. And we have the talent to be able to succeed when the ball's in play. And I do think that that's something that will bear itself out over time, over the long season. But, you know, 25 games in, we're about where we should be. We're in the middle of the pack. We're struggling to find consistency in doing the things we do, but we do them. And that's the real positive.
You know, Jerry, I think we talked about J.P. Crawford last week, but we've had another week of him just continuing to hit. I mean, just kind of doing everything out there and move him up to the three spot yesterday. He comes up with a couple of hits, even against Verlander. I mean, just he's just been incredible. You guys made the decision to sign him to an extension this offseason or even into spring training. Was there any indication that you had that he would be the type of player who would get a long-term contract and continue to get better?
None other than his age. You know, JP is, he's in at the apex of what the prime of a player's career generally looks like. You know, he's 27 years old or playing his 27-year-old season. He has consistently and methodically gotten better every year that he's played. And there's no reason that should stop when you're 27. That's when it's starting to hit its crest. And, You know, so we had a suspicion that he would continue to improve, but you know, this first month has been considerably more than just improving. He's just morphed into one of the best players in the league for this month. And you know, we've seen that before from JP. You know, and we've seen it in June of last year. We saw it briefly in May or June of 2019 when he first came to the big leagues. And you know what JP is doing now that makes it more sustainable is he is controlling the strike zone in ways that most other players in the league just don't. He is really refined in the pitches he swings at. And as a result, his exit velocities, his batted ball damage right now is considerably greater than it's ever been. And I do think he's learned lessons where, you know, it's hard to believe he's going to OPS north of 1,000 for a season. That's really, you know, high water. But the things he's doing will result in a more impactful offensive game. And I think you're seeing that from JP.
Well, and if JP Crawford ends up OPSing 800, 850 at a premier position and playing the defense he plays, I mean, that's a spectacular signing, right?
Oh, and a spectacular player. And, you know, frankly, if JP does all the things that he's doing right now and you know, continues to without the results and continues to do those things, he's already, you know, an all-star level player. He was a three-win player a year ago, probably should have been an all-star when it all came down to it, as hot as he was headed into it last year. But I think he's generally considered that. I know he is in our clubhouse. I believe he is around the league. He has that kind of gravitas when he walks out on a field. But I don't think he has to OPS 850 or 1,000 to be a very good player in this league. And what we're seeing is the best of what his game has to offer. But, you know, if he's an above average offensive player with his defensive skills and you know, the leadership, the on-field instinct, that's an awesome player to have, regardless of what position they play. It just happens that he plays the most position perhaps on the field.
Tell me a little bit about the ball. We were reading about it, and we talked to Jeff Passan about it earlier. It seems like, you know, the long home runs are still going out, but home run percentage, especially on fly balls, is way down. What's going on with the baseball?
I wish I knew. You know, it's something that's obviously been at the forefront, is certainly in the media over the course of the last couple of years. It's something that, you know, across the league, we've heard players talking about. Frankly, we've not heard a lot of it from our players. But you know, it's something that tends to trend. And right now, I don't know why home run percentage is down. I don't know why offense is down around the league. I'm certainly not an expert in the dynamics of the baseball and how it's wired. And I don't think that there's any reason to believe that there's nefarious behavior. Nobody wants to see less offense. It's fun to see, you know, runs scored. And I think that's that goes on up the ladder through the hierarchy of the league. So, you know, whatever happens, I think this is more, it is more to do with the early season, the fact that pitching is right now about as nasty as you can imagine night after night, and run scoring down. I don't know that it truly has anything to do with the ball, although, again, I'm no expert in that area.
If it stays that way, I mean, there's this theory that's been floated that if it is the ball and the ball is not carrying quite as far or whatever, could we see some changes potentially to the, you know, the uppercut swing and some of the, you know, the home run swings that we've seen? And we were talking to Mark DeRosa about a week or so ago, and he was talking about how in his day, you know, there were table setters and table clearers, and everyone sort of knew what their role was. And in his view, baseball of today is sort of everyone believes and has the ability to go be a table clearer. Do you think that could change at any point?
No, you know, and for whatever it's worth, that type of dynamic, you know, like the table setters, table clearers, it's a, you know, run scorers, run producers type of mentality. I still think that's the way baseball lineups are built. And, you know, but the way hitters hit has changed, you know, and you know, D-Row played around my time, and I remember what baseball was like, you know, at that. It was just a little different game. And more contact oriented, you know, the good starting pitchers were averaging, you know, 6.5, 7 strikeouts per nine. The great ones were a strikeout an inning. Now it's just different. And you're seeing a much heavier, much, much, much more velocity. You're seeing more spin on breaking balls. And the approach to hitting that you just described is simply that the information suggests if you hit the ball hard in the air, the results will be better. And I think you've seen it on the route telecasts. When you see exit velocities of 100 or 95 or 90, it can give you the ball and play average when you hit the ball that hard. So it's not really about guys sitting there trying to crank the ball out of the ballpark. They're just trying to hit it hard in the air because that's where the results are. And so, again, we focus on the process. If we get it airborne at X velocity, the chances of getting a hit are just higher. And, you know, that's something, frankly, we weren't technologically advanced enough to have known in the 90s. And I'm certain before that. But go ask Ted Williams when he was alive. What's the best thing you can do? Hit it hard in the air to the pole side, you know? And it's been baseball forever.
So to come back to your team, one of the bright spots certainly of this week was seeing Kyle Lewis start his rehab assignment in Tacoma. Certainly the 460-some-foot blast that he hit in his first at-bat was impressive. What have you seen, and what are we looking at as a timeline now for Kyle Lewis?
You know, I'm very excited that he's back on the field. This actually started probably about 3 weeks ago. So he's been playing in games in Arizona where, you know, there were no box scores and the games weren't being tracked and social media the way they are in Tacoma. But our hope is that that's the first sign that he's on his way back. He's going to play regularly, toggling back and forth between DH and left field for the most part. And, you know, when you start these rehab assignments, he has had, and I can tell you exactly how many at-bats he had down in Arizona, but it wasn't a small number. You know, he has had some reps, and we're trying to replicate spring training for him and just get him up to game speed. And at a general level, these rehab assignments account for about 20 days. So from the time he started his rehab, which was on Tuesday in Salt Lake, you've got 20 days to wrap it up. And, you know, that would roughly land us about the third week in May for his return to the big leagues. And, you know, while it might be a day or two shorter than that, that's the timeline. So sometime in the next, you know, 2.5-3 weeks or so, you'll see Kyle Lewis back on the field at T-Mobile, and hopefully everything is smooth until that point. We've had a lot of starts and stops with Kyle, and we want to just let him and his body tell us when he's ready to contribute. But it sure did look good that first day.
Oh, man, did he crush that ball. What a beautiful swing he's got when it all comes together. In terms of dealing with guys at the major league level, you know, how patient can you afford to be? I mean, last year was this sort of interesting in-between year with a lot of, you know, focus on development of players, et cetera. This year, you sort of signal to the world with the Cincinnati trade and trading one of your big prospects in Brandon Williamson that, you know, it's go time, right? So how does that change the way you handle struggling players, whether it be Jared Kelnick or Matt Brash, just anybody who's not quite, you know, how patient can you be with a player like that right now at the big league level?
Well, I guess you always want to be patient. You know, the player, and this one I can say from experience, the players perform at their best when they feel like you trust them. And, you know, but the part of the reason why the minor leagues exist is to develop players fully. And this generation of player, the youngest players, the young stars who are trying to break into the game today are at a disadvantage unlike any class of player before them, truly. And that is the loss of the 2020 season. It's the truncated summer in 2020 with, you know, 50 plate appearances versus the same pitchers day after day and 20 innings pitched in a season for your best pitching prospects. That really hindered development. So, you know, it's not shocking to me that some of our best young prospects and that many of the best young prospects around baseball are really struggling to get over that big league hump. Because we cost them I shouldn't say we, you know, this pandemic has cost them an entire season in 2020, another month of the 21 season, and just really it knocked their development. So we want to be patient, but we also want to understand that they may not be fully developed yet. And, you know, we're going to use the minor leagues as an aid in that. You've seen it in what we did a week ago in optioning Cal Raleigh. We will take that route more aggressively than we have in the last couple of years. we do want to win in the big leagues, and the performance does matter day to day. But we also want to make sure that we throw the player the life preserver when he needs it, and give him the opportunity to go back and just reset, take a breath. And you know, it's hard to learn these lessons at the highest level against the best players in the world night after night. When you're seeing, you know, Shane McClanahan's and Justin Verlander's and Drew Rasmussen's and Sandy Alcantara's, when you're seeing these guys night after night after night, it can get on you. And sometimes it's okay to take a reset when you're at the start of your career.
Do you guys have roster moves today?
We will. We will have a few.
Any you'd like to share early?
No, I'll share them later.
All right, Jerry, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. Sorry about the little phone issue. Glad we got you back. And we'll do this again next Thursday. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
You got it, man.
All right, there you go. That was Jerry DePoto. And obviously, they did have roster moves a little bit later.
That was a nice try.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I knew what he was going to say. If he wanted to tell me, he already would have told me. But you know, I just have to ask. I mean, I guess what he could have said was something like, hey, yeah, I'll tell you it's going to be on the pitching side of it, which is what it all ended up being. And, you know, we ended up talking through Jared Kelnick and do you end up doing something there? I still think that conversation will be ongoing. The fact that a move wasn't made yesterday doesn't mean a move won't be made at some point here. And, you know, I think you're going to give him, as I said before, until that off day next Thursday, which means you're going to give him another, you know, almost a week, right? It's 6 or 7 more games. And then, you know, you have that Thursday off day and you get to kind of determine what you want to do with him at that point. You know, you had a tough lefty on the mound last night. By the way, who's that guy? McClanahan? No, thank you. I don't want to see that guy ever again. What kind of wizardry warlock garbage is that? This guy in his dark magic lefty throwing 99 miles an hour with a ridiculous hook? Go away. Get that away from me.
He's 25, too.
So he was I looked it up yesterday because that was one of those moments where I'm like, why don't the Mariners have this guy? Why didn't they draft him? So I looked. I did look it up. So he was drafted in the 2018 draft with the number 31 pick. So it was like the first of the comp picks or whatever that went to the Rays. And so I'm like, all right, well, 31 means the Mariners probably had a shot at him. Why didn't they draft him? And I started looking up the list. And, like, this is where you used to get, like, you know, somebody where you're like, that guy never made the majors. He stinks. Like, what do you mean? Why did you draft, you know, poor Jeff Clement, nicest guy in the world. But whatever, you drafted Jeff Clement or Brandon Morrow or whatever guy you want. Austin, I don't even remember his name. Anyway, Drew Jackson, that's it.
Okay, I'd say Austin Jackson was a center.
Drew Jackson. It was Logan Gilbert.
Oh, so it's okay. Like, all right, yeah, fine.
Okay, fine. Logan Gilbert. I'm not going to get mad.
Nope.
Obviously, it's worked out really, really well, and it'll continue to work out well. But, jeesh, what value in the 31 pick to get a guy like that? He is just ridiculous. And it does speak to some of that conversation we've had about how these pitchers are just throwing the ball harder and harder. And I know the guy threw, what, 3 the other day at 105 point something. When I was young, and let me back that off. Like 5 years ago, lefties, you know, you occasionally had a reliever that would throw mid-90s. But for the most part, lefties would throw high 80s, low 90s, right? You'd maybe get a couple of guys who could hump it up into that like 93 to 95 range. But for the most part, that was the dominion of right-handers, and lefties would get you out by being crafty, by, you know, big natural movement or huge curveballs or whatever it is.
Yeah, it was like the Randy Johnson. I mean, that was probably the big outlier.
Very rare. I mean, it's one of the reasons Randy stands apart in so many ways. You just didn't have a lot of lefties that threw the ball really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Jason Vargas is your more typical lefty, right? I guess he threw more of a changeup than a curveball. But that was so much more typical of what you would get from lefties. And then in the last 5 years or so, and Eric O'Flaherty's talked about this quite a bit because he was a soft-tossing lefty reliever, you started getting some of these lefty relievers that throw the ball really hard. Gosh, I'm blanking on the name of the guy who was he came up with the Rays, Jake, I'll think of his name. But, I mean, like, you started getting these guys who all came up who were throwing the ball a whole lot harder and lefty relievers. Okay, fine. Lefty starters aren't they supposed to throw the ball 99 miles an hour. That's not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, watching that guy yesterday, no thank you.
Was Johan Santana, did he throw really hard?
Yeah, 93.
Okay.
Right? I mean, Johan was awesome. I mean, he was a fantastic player. I mean, wonderful. Underrated. People don't talk about him as much. But yeah, I don't think he threw high 90s. He was, you know, 93 to 95 on occasion. But, you know, sit low to mid-90s like a lot of lefties did at that time. So, yeah, I don't want to see that guy ever again. I'm pretty well
just
all set
the highlights
with that.
He's really good.
Yeah, seriously.
I remember thinking Barry Zito, too, at the time was like the scary dominant lefty that I didn't want to face when
but
I was
he
like,
didn't throw 95.
No, he just had that
crazy hook. Yeah. Mark Mulder was throwing 91, 93.
Yeah, right. It was more the Tom Glavins, right?
Sure, yeah. Live on the outside edge. David Wells. I mean, like all those lefties, they just sort of live on the outside, throw curveballs, maybe a changeup to get out righties. I mean, Jamie was a little bit of an extreme the other direction, obviously. He was such a soft tosser. So anyway, this was a point about Kelnick because he ends up getting the day off, which I don't blame them for. He's going to have to do something this week, and I know he's had some decent at-bats his last couple of games. He's hit the ball a little bit better. The approach has been a little bit better. But my guess is you got to circle next Thursday. I'm circling it here. If you're watching on the video, that was me circling a date on the calendar. You're probably going to have to, you know, Jerry used the phrase life preserver. Well, maybe that's a conversation that you're going to have before next Thursday. So you got to hit, man, just in general. And it's not just Jared. I mean, obviously, he's been sort of the focal point here. But, you know, it was nice to see Winker break out with a home run, by the way, off a tough lefty yesterday.
And crushed.
But you know, too many big moments where these guys are coming up and you're just not getting anything from them. Last night was a game they win last year. Right, you find a way, you battle your way back in, you're down by a run, your bullpen does its job, and you find a way to pounce in the eighth or ninth, and unfortunately, J.P. Crawford gets picked off, you go down in order in the ninth, and just unable to generate what they really needed to. So the big move yesterday that Jerry was alluding to, of course, was sending down Matt Brash. I've been wrong about this exact scenario before, and I really, really hope I'm wrong about it again. I'll explain how next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.